everything is coming along fundamentally to produce a higher gold price. And I think we'll see a higher gold price this year. And I also believe that within the next two or three at the most, we will see a really large move. All markets, especially the metals, tend to play catch up, meaning that once the public, and it's a small portion of the public, realizes that the dollar in their pocket may not be worth very much week after tomorrow, they will spend it on almost anything. And of course, if you have excess capital and you want to preserve it, nothing does it better than the precious metals.
This is Kaiser Johnson with Liberty and Finance, and this is the Miles Franklin Weekly Special for February 21st through February 28th, 2023, while supplies last. This week we feature 2022 silver maples at $3.40 over spot. Silver maples were the first silver sovereign coins to be minted at 4/9 fine purity and remain one of the most in-demand and recognized coins today. They come 25 to a tube, 500 to a box, and are available at the lowest premium we've seen in more than a year, at just $3.40 over spot. Canadian maples are also IRA eligible, and if you'd like to learn more about a precious metals IRA, call us and we'll be happy to help you in that process. To order this special or any of the many other options we have available, call us at 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237. We're available after hours and on weekends, and we look forward to speaking with you.
Welcome back to Liberty and Finance. We are always glad to have this well-followed and distinguished guest. David Morgan, also known as the Silver Guru and the founder of themorganreport.com, joins us this Tuesday, February 21st, 2023. David, thanks for coming back on Liberty and Finance.
Danica, it's always fun to be with you. Thank you.
It was great meeting you in person at the first Liberty Mastermind Symposium in Dallas, Texas, I think is where we met you, and you were a keynote speaker. And it's been a long journey since then. A lot of learning happened. In fact, you've just attended some conferences recently. And if you could maybe share with us, before we get into some specific questions that were submitted ahead of your arrival here, your key takeaways, the biggest things that you remember learning or talking about at the most recent conferences that you've attended.
Doug, and that's actually a pretty easy question, because I think I can sum it up in one word: frustration. I mean, it seems from the most recent conferences that many precious metals investors are discouraged because the stocks have underperformed. Anything in the mainstream bonds and general equities have done fairly well up until the last year. And they feel, almost betrayed. I won't say they feel betrayed. And I look back because of, me going through two full cycles that I remember going from, the 1970s up till January 21st, 1980, which was basically a 10-year run, and watching gold go from, the $100 an ounce to $200, back to $100, and caught a bid and went all the way up to $850. And then we basically had a bear market. In fact, silver traded around the $5 level for almost two decades. So if we go fast forward to the latest, still a bull market in my view, from 2000, I'd say 2003 for silver, but we'll start at 2000 for round numbers. And gold was the best investment you could be in for 11 years. Every year it was up, year over year. But now we've had about 12 years of, down to sideways movement. We've basically done what I call the round trip. We've gone from roughly $2,000 gold back to almost $2,000 gold. And in between, it hit, 1170 or something. So this is typical of markets. It's not something that doesn't really surprise me. I will say the length or the duration of this, going sideways or not performing is longer than I expected. But 11, 12 years is less than 20, and I think we're ended that. I think we're going to go into the new up cycle. It's not going to be week after next, but maybe the week after that. I really think it's fairly close. The other part is more substantive, and that is this. I put out on the Twitter feed recently that gold from 1925 to 2020 went from, I forget the number, $20.63 an ounce to about $1,900, which is an annual compounded growth rate of 4.5%. So that means that you were able to at least stay even with inflation, if not be ahead of it. And yet, what I just said, and I want to back it up and make the point really strongly, is that during that duration I just gave you, it also had a 20-year market where it was flat or mostly flat, silver especially. So if you look at it from the longer term, and I'm not saying everybody should hold gold for 100 years, but it is a legacy investment. If you look at the, let's say, the elite class, they own three things: real estate, gold, and fine art. That's it. I mean, yeah, they have stocks and bonds and all that, but they look at that as basically trading vehicles, or they start companies. But the point is, a legacy investment, something's been around for 5,000 years and trusted, that's it. So to summarize, gold has done its job in the longer term. And if you've been in the last 10 years, you have every right to be discouraged. But the game isn't over. You know, the old adage, it's not over until the fat lady sings. Everything is coming along fundamentally to produce a higher gold price. And I think we'll see a higher gold price this year. And I also believe that within the next two or three at the most, we will see a really large move. All markets, especially the metals, tend to play catch up, meaning that once the public, and it's a small portion of the public, realizes that the dollar in their pocket may not be worth very much week after tomorrow, they will spend it on almost anything. Jar of peanut butter, tuna fish, tires, whatever. And of course, if you have excess capital and you want to preserve it, nothing does it better than the precious metal. So probably overtalked it, but I think that's a good summation, because it's not there to make you wealthy. It can, when it really does the acceleration. I mean, I got lucky, I bought futures at 300 and it went to 850 on my birthday. And that was like 6 weeks. I mean, I was making more money per day than I was making at my job per month. I mean, it was exciting times, man. But, right place, right time, or pure luck, call it whatever you want. And in that time, you could have been made wealthy. But this is the kind of the get-rich-quick scheme that doesn't really work in the long term. Yeah, it happens from time to time. But from a longer-term perspective, gold's done its job. And I want to say something about silver. Silver's certainly underperformed gold, it's underperformed base metals, but there's $100. That's $1,000 dime. That is $100 face value. Why did I have to pay $2,500 Federal Reserve notes for 100?
Yeah, that's one of the things I think that helps people to wake up as much as anything, and that is to talk about silver coins, the dimes, quarters, half dollars, and dollar coins, and ask them when they're holding a silver dime in their hand, why they have to pay over $2 for it, or holding a quarter, and then why do they have to pay over $5 for it? What has changed? Has the silver changed, or has the dollar changed?
I know these are basics, but there's always new people, and there's different ways of saying things. I'm just going to digress for a minute, and I know you'll let me. But Bruce has worked for me for almost from the beginning. He's my webmaster. He does my film. He does my editing. That's customer service. I mean, this guy's worth four people. And I really thought he had the hard money, honest money story down, because he'd worked with me for, at that time, maybe a year, year and a half. And I literally saw the light bulb go off above his head, because we were at one of the earliest silver summits over in the Silver Valley. And you may remember, maybe not, the Mogambo guru, Richard Dowdy. And Richard was a paid speaker for, I think it was the second Silver Summit. And he does everything with humor. And it turned the light on for Bruce. So it depends sometimes on who's giving it or how the delivery is made. But he talked about the hedonic index, and that you have a steak. And the government says, well, you can replace it with a burrito. Because I want a burrito. A burrito isn't a steak, right? And it just made it so funny. But I could see where the whole concept of how the empire collapses, especially the monetary system and all that goes along with it. So thank you for letting me get that in there. I'll never forget it. And it was so funny. He was so good at making the points succinctly and with humor, which very few of us can.
Well, that point that you're making is painfully poignant, because one of the methods that is used in a failing government, a failing regime, is to start lying more than usual about things and calling things something that they're not. So we're supposed to be watching the degradation of the dollar. They say, oh, official policy of 2% inflation per year, but what they don't say is that's official theft of 2% per year. And then they don't even lie about the actual amount. When they were confessing over the last couple of quarters that inflation was flirting with 10% by their official measures, they're not telling you about how they've doctored the numbers on the official measures to make it seem smaller, to sound smaller than it is. And that's the whole fallacy of that calling something different is going to change the underlying reality. Whereas people who are purchasing precious metals for their own future and their family's financial futures are more rooted in reality. They trust real things more than they trust the words that politicians are going to tell them about things and tell them, oh, don't worry, you're not seeing the destruction of your purchasing power at the rate that you felt like it was. It's not like that at all. Here, we'll show you our numbers that have all the changes put into them. And we've spoken with John Williams of ShadowStats.com he explains all those substitutions that they've made to make the numbers not look as horrible as they really are. But that reminds me of what you're saying, that the metals eventually, throughout history, always do their job. They do their job of preserving purchasing power. And my wife and I, she's done the research for us, and she keeps telling me, hey, did you hear this? Hey, did you hear this? And the litany of reports that are coming in currently are making us feel like, wait a minute, our administration isn't doing their job, and the Congress isn't doing its job, and the courts aren't doing their job, and we're not able to live by the Constitution anymore, and so on. And so we at least look to something like gold and silver to do their job. So that's where the word frustration comes in, when people are waiting and expecting that they'll see evidence of that. And we've certainly got reason for frustration around that point. But that's the point, is you're trusting in something that has intrinsic value rather than in the politicians that are spinning the words around it. We've got a couple questions related to that. These questions were submitted by a viewer who had attended Rick Rule's recent Silver Investing Boot Camp, and there was a speaker at that boot camp, Jeffrey Christian, who talked about three grand myths that silver investors embrace. And could you address your take on these? We could take them one at a time. The first one is the world is running out of silver and the silver market has been in deficit forever. True or false, according to you? And why would Jeffrey Christian be calling that a myth?
Well, it's more nuanced than true or false. But if you look at Jeff's work, and I think it was a silver survey, I'm going to guess 5 years ago, he had a nice graphic in there. It showed that from recorded history, there's been 60 million ounces of silver that's been mined. And if you look at how much is above ground and available to the market, it's far less than that. So you can make that argument that there's been a deficit. If we mine that much, how come we don't have 60 million ounces? Now, the physicists will tell you it still exists because it's in a landfill, but it doesn't exist for practical purposes. I think the best way to look at the deficit is what's happening to the above-ground stockpiles. So I don't think even Jeff can argue this one. If you look at the 1990 amount of investment-grade silver above ground, it was 2 billion ounces. And we were in a deficit from 1990 to 2005. And for those 15 years, we actually ate up 100 million ounces on an annual basis average. So we got from 2 billion ounces to 500 million ounces. So we ate up 1.5 billion ounces. The only way you can, supply and demand always equals. So if you've got a deficit, then you take the above ground stockpile to fill in to make the balance. So you take the above ground stockpile to feed whatever the requirement is, be it investment demand or industrial demand or jewelry demand or silverware, for crying out loud. From 2005-06 until present day, the above ground stockpile of silver has been increasing. So from that perspective, we've seen an increase in above ground stockpiles. So are we in a deficit or are we not? And this is where it gets a bit nuanced, because the argument that we're still in a deficit is because the amount of demand is greater than the mine and recycled supply by a substantive amount last year, almost 200 million ounces. But where is that silver? And that's in investors' hands, basically. And I don't think anyone should have a problem with that concept. I always like to flip it over and ask the same thing about gold. I mean, the gold to silver ratio is 7-1 right now in the ground. The natural ratio back in the year 1300 is about 12-1. So we're certainly mining silver out at a rate that's depleting what the amount left is. So gold is, every ounce of gold is pretty much there. You know, I mean, it's either in jewelry or in a coin or in a bar. Some of it's been lost, but nothing like the silver market that really does consume part of it. So if you think the argument that silver is still building the stockpile invalidates it as a store of wealth, then you better look at the same question applied to gold. Because if you applied that to gold, it's like, well, gold's always increasing in supply. So what's the reason for holding it? And the last thing, and I know you're almost sick of me saying it done again, but all markets move at the margin. It's not how much gold's above ground or how much silver's above ground. It's what's the float. If everybody that owns silver is unwilling to sell it up until $30 an ounce, then somebody that goes in the coin shop and buys two coins is going to move the price. Now, that's an extreme example, but I'm doing it as a thought experiment because that's basically how markets work. And this is where you get into these parabolic moves because most people are taught incorrectly to buy low and sell high, and that does apply at times. But especially in the futures of commodities markets, you want to buy high and sell higher. Because when you have silver at, let's say, 30 and no one wants to sell until then, this is just a thought experiment. I know people are selling it today. But they hold it. There's no supply. So the price has to be bid up to free some into the marketplace. Well, when you get a new high, what do? Psychologically, you hold on to it. You don't want to sell. Why? Because you're at a new high. You don't know how high it's going to go. So if it's at, you know, 30 and that's a new high, which it wouldn't be in the long-term chart, but let's say in the last 10 years or so, you're going to hold it. So that means in order for it to make a move and no one wants to sell, it's got to be bid higher to 33 or whatever. You might get some sales. And this is why you get these parabolic moves, because everyone does wants to know how high is high and to hold until it gets to a level that someone says, oh man, that's enough. It's gone from 30 to 60 in 2 months. Are you kidding me? I'm out. And the problem with that is this time, and this is where I messed up the first time in 1980 because I was overeducated. That's what all my excuse is do you really want to sell that precious metals for fiat? And that's a question that people may be asking themselves this time. I asked myself that question in 1980 and I said, I'm not so sure I want it. You know, I want the paper. Wrong. The best thing you could have done in January 1980 was to sell your gold, buy the long-dated treasuries, the long bond, get, you know, 17% interest, hold it for almost 40 years, which is the most major market in bonds ever, collected a coupon of 17%, and see the bond value increase, increase, and increase. So I certainly will admit I was wrong in that instance. But that doesn't mean that this next time around, when we've got vastly more paper chasing a fixed supply of goods and services that people really will want to exchange their metal for fiat. Now, what I think is going to happen, at least in some instances, is direct exchange. I will give you, you know, 100 ounces for your used Chevy, or I'll give you 2,000 ounces for your barn, or, you know, stuff like that. I don't want to go too deep, but get the idea where you use the money directly for the exchange rather than using fiat as an intermediary. So the metal trumps the currency, and that has happened in the past.
We have another question along the same lines, and this is another one that was proposed as a myth by Jeffrey Christian. That is that the gold and silver prices are suppressed.
Yeah, that one Jeff and I disagree on. And, you know, Jeff and I have known each other for 20 years. In fact, I had Jeff on a channel called the Free Market News Network way back before there was YouTube. Now that business failed. It just cost too much to get our own servers and stream video, because that's when video streaming was like brand new. No one knew how to do it. Anyway, I digress. So, you know, if you read my book, The Silver Manifesto, I go through the Sharpe's ratio, why it's almost impossible to not show the markets manipulated. Gad has done great work showing that the London close and the New York open has a propensity to be a certain way, and that's impossible on a random walk. And then you have all these lawsuits where most of the parties have an admitted guilt, but they paid these big fines because of spoofing the market. So I just disagree. Has it been suppressed every day? No, but it certainly has been managed for a very long time. I mean, this book behind me by Sutton, he talks about gold. And, you know, I've done a mastermind series. I forget the gentleman's name. He's actually more or less in my neighborhood. He came to me at one of the conferences and showed me the gold chart. He says, this isn't a random walk. There's only one way you can get a chart like this, and that's with manipulation. I don't think he even used that word, but it's a fact. You can't go from a fixed price of 35 up to 42.22, and it's government says, no way we can raise the price of gold. We're admitting the dollar isn't doing well. So once they made that official change from a 35 and a half to 42.22, it's never changed because they want to make sure everybody's brainwashed with the propaganda press that a dollar is a dollar. But a dollar is 371.2 fine grains of 999 fine silver. And that definition has never changed. So were you paid dollars today? You know, probably not.
That's an amazing point. This gets back to what we were talking about with the silver dime. Some of the viewers have heard this story where my family was on a trip across the southern U.S. We were on actually the Gulf of Mexico coast of Texas in 1968, and there was a gas price war, 19.9 per gallon, 19 cents, 0.9 per gallon of gas, two dimes, two silver dimes. At that point, could have bought 1 gallon of gas. Two silver dimes today can still buy you a gallon of gas if you are able to either swap into the currency or find someone who, as you've been, who said they're willing to trade directly. And that's increasing as people learn that they shouldn't be trusting the currency that's been collapsing around them. So the nominal price today for a gallon of gas is obviously much higher than two dimes, but that's all it's worth in silver. So
let me add on to that. I don't want to interrupt, but in the LA area at that same time frame, there aren't really any independent gas stations anymore. They're all owned by conglomerates. But in the day that you're referring to, there were some independent owners, and there was a couple in LA that had a line like, these pumps are for silver only. So if you're paying in silver, that's your pump. Pay on demand, you know.
And that's the other thing that people ask me, and we've talked about this with some of the guests. I'd like to hear your thought on it. When it's always newbies, people who've never purchased precious metals before, but they're getting the advice from their family or advice from their friends, or they're just hearing more about it, so they're starting to look into it. And one of the questions that's a tip-off is when they say, okay, so I can buy it today, but how can I get rid of it? How do I get rid of it when the time comes? And you talked about certain extreme market conditions where there may be a reason to swap into something else that's real. But what's your take on that, the psychology behind that question of how do I get rid of precious metals when the time comes?
Yeah, that's not that complicated. I mean, I've asked that question myself. I mean, the standard is you go back to the same coin dealer you bought it from, you exchange it for fiat, and you go out in the marketplace and you buy your Starbucks. However, now with today's technology, you can put it on the blockchain and pay with your phone, or you can have a silver or gold backed debit card, which I have one, as you know. So there are ways to do it. And there's more states that are using silver and gold as means of payments. I think there's 14 states now in the union that, state that it's law. You can have an exchange in gold and silver as long as both parties agree. The only way to do it practically is to either back a debit card with the physical metal and let the bank or preferably the proprietor of the exchange take out the silver, change it to fiat, make the bank happy. But you're actually spending it. So James Turk was the one that actually brought it to my attention. Now I asked him, what answer do you give when people ask you? And he says, well, they'll spend it. You know, of course, he started gold money. And at that time, you were able to use gold money in a lot of exchanges. I mean, I paid for some services with gold money, and many people did. That kind of got nixed later on. But the concept is correct. So you could do direct, where I can buy a car with so many gold coins or silver coins, and both parties agree and we're good to go. You could do a debit card as gold or silver backed or both, and you could go on the blockchain and do it. And I just got to fit this in. This is kind of off topic, but it really gets to the silver community, or at least I hope it does. And, you know, up into the 1900s, we were still on basically a world silver standard. And yet no one even thinks of silver as money anymore, even though in the 14 Romance languages, the word silver money is the exact same word. So if I'm in Mexico and I say money isn't money or silver isn't money, they wouldn't know what the hell I'm even talking about. But I digress further. But just think about the Silver Eagle program and how many Silver Eagles are sold. But take this thought experiment, Dunnigan. There's a little one of those little cardboard signs. It's maybe, you know, 4 inches by 5 inches, little fold-out thing. They must cost 3 cents to make in bulk. And it says at every bank teller window, buy Silver Eagles here. What do you think the demand would be then? Where all these sleepy Americans walk into the teller and say, I could buy silver. A lot of people would do a one-off. I'm going to buy one coin for my grandson. I'm going to buy one for my son's birthday. I'm going to buy one for my daughter-in-law. I'm going to buy, and then there'll be others. Say, well, you can buy silver at the bank. See, the banks have separated themselves from reality for a very long time because what's real is money and what's false is the currency. But there's only about 0.1% of the population to even understand what I just said. But it's been your job and mine to bring it to the fore. And, you know, you can only hide from the truth for so long. Once the great comeuppance happens, everyone will know they should have had precious metals.
It's funny that you bring up that story today because I just got off the phone with a client who is a first-time client who sent a bank wire. It took he called me from the bank and said they won't send the wire. They're not going to do it. They said that because I say I don't know the recipient personally, it's probably fraud. They're not going to let me send it. And I talked him through. I sent him the Better Business Bureau link for Miles Franklin, et cetera. Said, show them this. Show them 33 years in business, A+ rated, accredited, zero customer complaints and everything. He called me back about a half hour later and said, okay, done again. I got it done. But I wish I had a videotape of that, what I just went through. They had the supervisor of the bank come out. They tried to tell him that the address didn't match on their first check. Oh, it did on the second check, but he shouldn't be doing this and on and on. So speaking of the banks not pushing sales of legal tender made by the U.S. Mint, you think that'd be pretty official. Anyway, they're making it darn challenging in some cases for clients who are just trying to take their funds and buy something that's real with it. So as far as that difference between fake money and real money, it can be challenging for people, especially if they're new at it, to be able to make that initial purchase. But if you stick to it and assert yourself, you can get it done. And David, any parting thoughts you have for our audience before we let you go?
Well, this is going to sound like a setup, but I just got an email from one of our premium members with essentially what you just said. You know, he's having a very hard time with ACH transfer. And so it's just basically what you said. I think, you know, with the blockchain is probably your best bet because it's outside of their domain. So you'd be able to make a transfer. I had one example. It was one of my clients in the UK, wonderful guy, and he was going to wire me. And he wired the year before, and the bank did the same thing. No, we don't know. It sounds fishy. We're not going to do it. It's his money going to me, but the bank isn't allowing him to do it. He finally, in frustration, gave up, and he made payment in the load token, which is, you know, a program that I'm an ambassador for. Therefore, I'm biased. I have an investment in it. Therefore, I'm biased. But regardless, you know, it was like, and it was so much fun. Because it took like less than 3 seconds. I mean, he just went bang, bang. Did you get it? Sure did. No bank, no hassle. Exchange silver for service, and everybody was happy.
Yeah, if people are getting more and more skeptical, and I think understandably so, when the officialdom, whether it's institutions, government, private, corporate, or whatever, media, are saying, no, this is what you need to know about this. This is the official story. And they go, really? Because they realize the other side of the story is not being told. So yeah, when you're essentially going into the bank to take your funds out of the system, out of the grid, out of the matrix, and put it into something real that you can hold in your hand that has no counterparty risk, and they say, no, that sounds pretty risky. So it's interesting who's doing the protecting of whom there. But anyway, David, it's been a pleasure for over a decade. We'd love to have you back on, as we frequently are able to do. We're grateful for your presence here on Liberty and Finance. And people go to themorganreport.com. Is that right, David, to
That's
find
correct.
Out more?
Yes.
All right. And folks, so you don't forget and you don't miss a single episode with David, make sure you go to libertyandfinance.com. Sign up for our free email list. You'll get one email per day in your inbox with our latest interviews with David or any of our other guests and our weekly special, libertyandfinance.com. David, as always, thanks for joining us on Liberty and Finance.
I totally enjoyed it. Thank you, Delegate.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.